At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie. I have a tickle in my throat. I don't think we should redo that. I'm Katie.
I'll leave it in. I'll leave it as is. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm busy. I'm so busy. It's so fucking hot. That might be the quickest I've ever sworn in an episode. Just like right to the F word. Yeah, I'm good. Today I went to Target and I bought a pair of shorts in my size without trying to size down mentally and be like aspirational sizing.
I love this for you.
I bought my size without judgment and I'm really excited about it as someone who's like lived in a fat body my whole life. That was like the first time that's happened. It was very exciting.
I'm so happy for you.
And the shorts are so comfortable.
Who doesn't love comfortable shorts?
Right? And they were on sale, 30% off.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. That was an exciting moment in my adult life. How are you? How is Jersey?
Before I get into that, just noticing the top that you have on, and I just need to compliment you on it really quick because it's fucking adorable. First of all, it looks so cute on you, but also it's so cute. It's little kitties.
It is little kitties. It's my Renfair corset. That's like the most breathable shirt that I have that doesn't fully show my nips.
Not that I would mind.
No, but just in the sense of like being aware of it, you know? I wouldn't be able to record comfortably. Not a fan of nudity, personally. I feel like I'm going to burn myself.
Oh my God.
So yeah, I had to wear this because it's so fucking hot.
It's so hot, which is why I'm currently downstairs in my parents' dining room. That and the internet extender, like, would not let me connect upstairs. Thank God my parents are down the shore right now, because, like, imagine if I had to, like, record this and Terry's just in her office listening to the absolute bullshit that we say. Oh, man. The amount of times that they've asked me, hey, can you put your podcast on our phone? I've been like...
No.
Oh, man.
No.
And not that we don't put out good content, because we do. It's the amount of cursing that happens. My mother is not a fan of that. Not a fan of anyone cursing.
It's fine.
Other than it being so hot and their AC still being out. Yeah, that's why I couldn't just sit upstairs. Like, the AC has been out since before I got here. They are waiting on a part to be delivered, and they are waiting on a permit for the work from the town.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Which, like, that, if it was just waiting for the piece to show up, it wouldn't be that bad.
Yeah.
But, like, the permit for the work from the town, that's annoying.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, she's got a lot of experience with that as like a realtor, so at least she knows what she's doing to be able to obtain one, but like, mad annoying. Also, it's like so hot upstairs and I'm the only one who lives upstairs.
Of course. So it doesn't super impact them.
Yes. Last night, my dad was like, I know it's so hot up there. Like, do you want to sleep in my room with me? Like, I'll just sleep outside of the blanket and you can sleep under the blanket. And I was like, first of all, I love you so much. But if I was gonna sleep downstairs, I would just go sleep on the couch.
Yeah.
I was like, as a 33-year-old woman, I love you so much, Dad, but I am not going to share the bed.
No, thanks.
No.
No.
I appreciate the offer.
The gesture is so kind.
It's so kind, but I think I'll just suffer with three fans pointing at me.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. We don't have central AC, as you know. So we've just got our one fan getting us through in our old ass house that we love so much.
Other than that, I think the only other thing that like I've got an update on is I have a list of like 2024 trails that I want to hit. And I'm kind of just like adding to them as I go and I like learn about new places and things like that. But I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 of them marked off on my list out of 18 so far.
Hell yeah, dude.
9 out of 18. Oh, that's half, isn't it?
That is half.
I do math. I do math well.
You do math good.
No, I don't.
So good.
So good. The rest that I have on my list, so I've hit like the DNR Canal Trail. You know that's my fave.
Mm-hmm.
Duke Farms. And I'm counting like parks in this as well.
Yeah.
Van Vleck Gardens over Montclair, Verona Park, Mills Reservation, Grover Cleveland Park, Heritage Rail Trail. That one was with you. Mm-hmm. Turkey Mountain, Natterar. I've got Pyramid Mountain, which is across the street from Turkey Mountain. Schoolies, which is, remember a couple years ago? Oh, this was during COVID, during the shutdown. Remember when I went out a hike by myself to go find a place with waterfalls and I blasted my fucking ankle?
Yes.
And then had to climb, literally climb and scale the waterfall to get out?
Yes.
Schoolies, that one's on my list. Now that I have my ankle support hiking boots, I'm going to tackle that one.
Hell
yeah. I am not going to have any injuries on it because I am determined to do that trail again.
You got it.
Black River Trail Loop, Watchung Reservation, which like I've been there before, but that one has like so many trails in it. So I want to hit that one. Castle Trail at Ramapo, Garrett Mountain Reservation, Grand Loop and Morristown, Hemlock Falls, Stonetown Circular Trail. There's also this like, I think it's Van Slyke Castle that's nearby.
Cool.
That a couple people suggested to me. So I think I want to hit that one soon because I'll go to Castle Ruins. Like, yes, please. Thank you.
Truly.
Multiple people suggested that one to me when I put up the story on Instagram that was like, give me your trail suggestions. And I was like, okay, if we got multiple people being like, do this one, I'm going to.
Absolutely.
So that's my goal. One of my goals for this year.
Nice.
Is to hit this, all these trails that I have listed. I'm still going to keep adding to them. I'll add wherever we decide to go for our camping trip. I just want it to be like a real active year. And so far,
hell yeah.
So good.
Hell yes, dude. I love that.
So that's my update. Was there anything that you wanted to talk about regarding today's episode before we get started?
Sort of. Almost. I have one other request for you. And I guess any listeners who like have my phone number or message me on social media, I would like to request that people stop tagging me in things and that they tell me about it. Instead.
Oh, like send it to you instead of just tagging you?
Yeah. And when you do that, like tell me what brought you joy about it. You know, because this happened, I realized this because I saw that the Knives Out movie, just the third one, is coming out.
Oh, nice.
Amazing. Did you just learn about that?
Yes. In this moment.
Fucking incredible. I'm perfect example. And I sent Mike a thing about it. And he was like, oh, I tagged you in that on Facebook earlier. And then he said, LOL, I mean, this is the first time I'm hearing about it. I'm so excited. And then I said, yes, I'm so glad we just found out within moments of each other and that we get to share this joy together. And then I realized that is, I miss that quality. Aww. Just in general. And Facebook and social media has ruined that for us.
I think so. Because sometimes I'm not seeing it until like hours later. Sometimes on Facebook, I don't.
Sometimes it's days later. But yeah. It's just like, I miss the moments of being like, oh my God, did you see the movie, the thing that just happened where it's like, we learned about this and like we got to share in that experience like together rather than just like being tagged in it and then like I like experience it a little, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Aw, Katie. I don't think I ever tag you in things really, unless it's the Taylor groups on Facebook, but that's it. I feel like I just send you shit.
No, you usually send me stuff and like Velma sends me stuff and Andy sends me stuff.
Yes.
Mike sends me stuff too. But like, I think that we should all make an active effort to like stop tagging people in things and start trying to like just tell people about stuff. instead.
Yeah. Side note to that, if you're sending things to people, it's better for the algorithm for whoever's post it is than just commenting someone's tag in their post. Because they also have like a certain word thing, word limit that you have to like hit for a comment to like really do good for someone's thing, algorithm and shit, and like their growth. So if you're sending things to people instead, that'll also help the creator who's shit that you clearly enjoyed enough to send it to someone.
Very true. Very true.
Well, side note.
Even if it's just like a message, I don't know, maybe that's silly and little, but I'm also silly, so whatever.
I actually almost just spit out my water on my computer.
I'm also ridiculous, so like feel free to not listen to me, but I think it makes moments like more communal, and it like will isolate people less.
You know me, I love this sentiment as a deeply emotional and cheesy and sentimental person. I love this. So true. I think this is great.
So yeah. True. So yeah, that's all, friends.
Aw, okay. Well then, should we get into the episode?
Mm-hmm. Today's episode is kind of a shorter one, maybe by Katie standards, but also maybe by regular standards. I genuinely don't know how long this is going to end up being. But as I got like closer to writing about Diana's death, I found myself thinking about how these episodes that I do are sort of the closest that I get to doing true crime reporting. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of the reasons why when I'm doing a deep dive like this, I spend so long finding these little details about a person to try and give a whole portrait of who we're talking about, because Diana and Marilyn Monroe and JFK and every victim are so much more interesting than the way that they died, even yes. though that's all that really gets talked about. And I know that this is like, it's hard, I guess, for me to talk about, because for a really wild majority of my life, I consumed a lot of true crime.
Oh, you and me both.
Even as a child.
Scooby-Doo was a gateway drug.
Scooby-Doo was absolutely a gateway drug. It brought me to CSI, and then it was just fucking downhill from there. As I started aging, and I still couldn't put into words, like, what about this subject and about all of this, like, really fascinated me so much. And I started pulling away from true crime as a whole, podcast by podcast, I guess. Yeah. Not realizing that I had an issue with true crime as a whole, but I would kind of be like, well, I don't like the way that these people talk about it, mm-hmm. but I'm okay with like this. It was difficult. Like it took a lot of unpacking and kind of like understanding what interested me about true crime. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I don't like have notes for this part. I'm sort of just talking.
Of course. I mean, we were talking about this yesterday. Hold on. I'm going to pull up our text because I think a lot of the stuff that we said yesterday will be helpful in this.
Hold yes, on. Probably.
Okay. I did say that, like, I think it's super interesting how the both of us kind of at the same time, but without actually discussing it with each other, pulled away kind of slowly. And I said to you, now I just watch mysteries and fictional things. I don't really listen to true crime pods anymore or watch any of the investigation discovery stuff that like I used to be absolutely obsessed with. And I think when I started thinking about what I was consuming specifically through investigation discovery, so much of it was very sensationalized.
Yeah.
Even just in the names of the shows.
Yeah.
The names of their shows are like insane. Like Nightmare Neighbor Next Door.
Oh my God.
And then it's like sensationalized recreations of like horrific abuse by people's like next door neighbors.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, it's fucking wild that I was like obsessively consuming things like that and then taking them in as these like stories, but it's actually about real people and the crazy shit that they experienced. And then I was like, ooh, ethically and morally, now I feel very weird about this, like consuming that. But we never really talked about it before. We just both kind of stopped. And now I'm just like, yeah, let me go back to the roots of my like fictional dog crime solver mystery mm-hmm. people, where like people aren't being murdered, and it's not like sensationalized story of a real person.
Yeah. I wish that I could say that I had fully pulled away and unpacked it and understood that true crime was entirely wrong before this happened, but it was really when a few years ago a family member of mine went missing. No one had heard from them in months and their phone wasn't being answered. And it was when I was making like missing persons posters that I was like, oh, fuck. This is an experience that I've only heard told through third-hand accounts. And it like turned into a whole ordeal where that family member was found and like we reconnected and they're safe. But we didn't know that for a while. And it was during the pandemic and we couldn't just go and find them. And I was getting calls like in the middle of the night telling me really horrible things or like people trying to be helpful, but they weren't. There were a few true crime podcasts, specifically Amanda from Wine and Crime, who shared his story and like his missing persons poster. And that was huge, as well as M from And That's Why We Drink. And that definitely like led to a lot of eyes and like people using their flat platform. But there were other people who I was just like, what the fuck? Like, my brother's missing. Why are you asking me these questions? There was like confusion that got created while all of this was happening because I reached out to another family member who didn't recognize my name. So confusion was created in our story in a way that had someone made a true crime podcast episode about this whole situation, it would have made this other family member look really fucking sketchy.
Oh, I remember.
It just like helped me experience this thing where it was like, wow, I'm in a position where like my person ended up being so safe. All of this still fucking happened. If he hadn't ended up safe, and this went the other way, like this sort of thing has like ruined people's lives over just like a totally innocent misunderstanding.
Yeah.
And I've heard about a ton of those totally potentially innocent misunderstandings and situations in that stupid amount of true crime that I've consumed.
I recently was listening to and I say recently, I mean, this is like months ago, but I was listening to an episode of one that I had like stopped listening to for a while. I was like, well, let me just give it a shot. And I'm listening to it. And they're talking about a specific person in this, the way that they were questioning all of these things that like, honestly, seemingly could have just been, like you said, truly just misunderstandings, and the way that they were very much making this person seem like a bigger player in the story than they actually turned out to be. I was like, this is when your hypotheticals are like actively harming people, because now anyone who hears this, especially anyone in their community, could potentially believe that this person is not good and react to them in a real life way that could be harmful, you know? It's very touchy.
It's super touchy. And not to be like, the exception to the rule is there are three podcasts that I personally think not like do true crime well, but And That's Why We Drink offers very good recaps of crimes, usually, especially lately, been leaning towards like more historical and past crimes that like don't have a lot of focus and a lot of attention and sometimes like aren't solved. And I think that that's really great. But the other half of that podcast is also all paranormal. So they do two different things. Wine and Crime, I think, also offers very good recaps, and they also don't just cover murders. But the other one that I think does a lot of murders and other things as well, but is done very well, is Sinisterhood. And that I think is extra important because one of the hosts was previously a lawyer.
Okay.
So there is a ton of legal explanation involved in that podcast. And that offers a perspective that is not frequently found, and also just like not sensationalized. Like, her as a lawyer doesn't have anything to like gain from giving these legal perspectives, but she could lose a ton of fucking credibility if she didn't do it well. And she is very much still, I don't know if she's still practicing, but she still has like her ability to practice because she only recently stopped practicing. Those are my personal recommendations for people who still find themselves within the genre. I don't think it's a bad thing to consume if you do it ethically. And I think that people can find that for themselves. It's just not really something that I feel comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And as we approach the end of Diana's life, I felt like we were getting closer and closer to a true crime episode. And I was struggling with that. And I was put in almost like a chokehold of writing. It was really, really difficult. I've been umming a lot. Sorry, future Ashley. So a lot of this is difficult because the final years of Diana's life, she is very much so a human being, which sounds obvious. Like, that sounds so silly. Like, obviously she was a human being. But what I mean in that is that she was flawed. Diana is both an amazing person who did a lot of important things and the woman who pushed her old elderly stepmom down the stairs and had affairs. And in this episode, I'm going to get into quite a few things that are just like downright unacceptable behavior. Diana's not the only one, of course. Everyone involved in this story is human and thus flawed. For this family, their every move is often, and thought and word and action, everything that they fucking do is recorded down and judged for literally all of history. That's the kind of like shit that us peasants have anxiety and nightmares and like panic attacks about. You know, what if everyone is watching me and judging me? And we pay therapists to walk us through and be like, find the evidence. That's not happening. No one is writing an account of everything you do for every human for all of time to look at and judge. But for the royal family, they literally fucking are. And none of this is to say, feel bad for these people. But it is to say, maybe we should all stop judging them a little bit. And that includes myself. I am really, really working on trying to shed my inherent and immediate judgments of people. It's not fucking easy. But as I read more about these humans, I was just like, y'all are so regular and you are put on a fucking platter and chopped apart for the entire world to see. And of course, you have millions of dollars and you represent colonialism. Like, this is not a poor, rich people situation. But I was like, wow, Katie, this story is so sad. This is just like a bunch of broken people. The next episode after this is their finalized divorce and Diana's death. I don't know why. I don't know if it's the year of school I've done now to be a counselor, but like, this feels different from Marilyn Monroe. This yeah. feels different from JFK. Maybe it's because our lives overlapped. This isn't history for us. Like, we were alive when she died. I don't know. I was only 5. It's not like I was like super aware of what was happening. I just wanted that purple fucking beanie baby.
I think that both of those can be true. But I think more so of it is the time that you have spent in school for clinical psychology, learning to not only assist others with their mental health, but you're also learning yourself how to be better for yourself and in turn looking differently at the world. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
Thank you. All I could think of during all of this was the Tortured Poets Department. This album may as well have been written about Diana's life. What if they didn't do it to hurt me? But what if they did?
Were you sent by someone who wanted me dead?
Were you writing a book that literally comes up? All of these things just, it made the approach to these episodes really difficult. These notes are, it's a little bit shorter in my eyes. Normally I have double digit pages. I don't. I think I have like 7.
I was going to say, at this point, we're 33 minutes in just from our discussion. So it might be a regular length episode.
It might just be. We left off with Diana pushing her stepmom down the stairs at her brother's wedding, and her dad refuses to speak to her for 6 months. And that's the end of the 80s. They do like rekindle their connection, but it's never really like quite the same after that. And unfortunately, her father does pass of a heart attack in 92. Mm. And almost immediately after he dies, Diana and her brother kick their stepmom out of their dad's house.
Holy shit.
Like, pack your shit up and go right now. But you can't use our dad's luggage. Here's some trash bags. Need help getting that shit down the stairs? Here you go. throws it down the stairs.
Stop. Why is she... I can't, not with the stairs. Yeah. Again, with the same person.
Her husband just fucking died.
Right? I'm like, Diana, where is your heart? Because we all have this notion of her, and I say we all, I mean, like, obviously we've listened to some crazy shit in the last few episodes, but like, in general, society lauds her as a kind-hearted person. Yeah. I'm like, where the fuck is your empathy for the person who loved your father?
Exactly. And like, this is some of the behavior that I was talking about, like, unacceptable. I can't say that I wouldn't have done something like that. I'm a fucking flawed human being. But my life is not dissected on a fucking platter the way that all of this is. And Diana's not alive right now to like look back and be like, oh, oops. Let me reflect on this. Everywhere around her is just toxic. We're in the 80s, end of the 80s, and that is when we get kind of what is known as Squidgy Gate.
I don't think I've ever heard of this.
Squidgy is an English word, like an affectionate word. It's used in this conversation between her and this guy, James Gilby. Like, he calls her Squidgy, like, a ton of times. This romantic affair, if we can call it that, we'll get to it, was like, Diana left this out and all of her affairs, left all of those out from Andrew Morton's book, because she was using this book to like paint herself in the best light possible. So it's not like the most honest thing. She wasn't being fully honest about it. What I really want to highlight about these tapes, there's tons of them. You guys can find the transcripts. But I want to highlight the difference between the tapes that we have of Diana's affair and the tapes that we have from Charles, and the weirdness around how the tapes exist in the first place. The tapes between Diana and Gilby are hilarious. There's just actually no other way to describe it. And it truly like feels like it's out of a scene of Mean Girls.
I can't wait to hear it.
I just took one clip because that's not what any of this is about. But he's like so into her, and she's on the phone. He literally says at one point, I haven't played with myself for a full 48 hours. Not for a full 48 hours. And she was just like, I watched EastEnders today.
He's giving everything. She's giving nothing.
She just like, doesn't give a shit.
Oh my God. Do you even like me?
It is so funny that you say that, because there is another quote where he says something about how she looks beautiful, and then she's just like, you're so nice. You're the nicest person.
Wow.
And he's like, oh, you are too. Well, not to me sometimes.
My jaw is on the floor. Oh my God. At least they're being honest.
And it's like, she's in control of it though. Like, you know, she's the person in power in this, and she hasn't been in her marriage. Mm. That, compared to the tapes that were released in 1993 by the British press that included a full transcript of a phone conversation between Prince Charles and Camilla Parker Bowles, which included what Tina Brown referred to as an intimate and sexual exchange.
So sorry.
Quote, the conversation was notable for a number of reasons, not least of which involved the heir to the throne saying that he would like to live inside her trousers and joking that he would be reincarnated as a tampon, henceforth the name of the scandal, end quote, from Tina Brown's book. I had to mention it with the unveiling of Charles's new...
His portrait!
Portrait.
Oh, no! Oh.
I've seen some amazing TikToks. Being like, this all makes sense now. He finally is the tampon.
I'm so glad that I didn't see any of those until like after you have said this to me, because oh my
God. Me too.
I'm honestly so glad every time I learn something and it comes from you, but it's like been on the internet and I haven't seen it yet because I'd rather hear it from you.
And this is why I don't tag you in shit. Because I'd rather tell you.
Oh my God.
The notorious tampon conversation has been talked about and covered in every angle possible everywhere. There is no joke that I could make, so I'm not going to read that part.
Okay.
The whole conversation. Mm-hmm. I just want to show another part of the conversation.
Okay.
that just kind of like compared to Gilby and Diana, it's like night and day. Camilla says, I can't bear a Sunday night without you. I can't start the week without you. And Charles says, what about me? The trouble is I need you several times a week. Like, that is not even close to I haven't touched myself for 48 hours. I watched EastEnders today. Like, I watched TV.
Oh,
cool.
I mean, listen, I'm not a fan of Camilla and Charles, but you can't say that they didn't love each other. Or that they don't.
They absolutely do.
They are infatuated, in fact.
For sure. And it's so cringy. But I also wish cringy personal moments on everyone.
Yeah.
Like, if someone took the stupid, silly shit that Mike and I have said to each other from what started as us, like, trying to be sexy and then just went straight into goofy, if other people read that, it would be the cringiest shit in the entire world.
But it would be amazing because it's so cute. Like, you guys are so cute when you're talking with each other and being lovey. I want that.
Don't be Charles and Camilla, but I hope that everyone has someone that they can, like, be cringy and cute with.
Yeah.
Not, again, I'm not a Charles defender, but, like, he's just a person. He is just a man. Like, people have these, like, crazy high expectations. Okay, anyway, get off my let's stop judging Charles and Diana. I don't know why this is so important to me, y'all. I'm sorry. So regardless, the difference between the two is so important. The other thing about these squidgy tapes, because those Charles and Camilla tapes, those don't come out until 1993. The squidgy tapes make their way into Diana's life when the press, like, comes up to her at the end of the 80s and they're like, hey, what's up? So we have these tapes of you having an affair, like these phone conversations about you having an affair with someone, and we want to know if you, like, want to comment about it. And she just be like, excuse me? What?
She's like, the fuck are you talking about?
The fuck? Exactly. Nothing happens with these tapes for years.
Never heard of any of this.
They do eventually come out, like, while she's alive, but not for a few years. And she's just like, what the fuck?
Like, why hold on to it?
It made, like, one thing very, very clear. Someone is tapping her phone and sending these recordings to the fucking press.
Wait, I didn't even think about that for a minute. Oh my God.
And to be honest, I actually still don't know who was tapping her phone. And these are where these weird little confusions come up, because it could have been anyone in her life. This was a moment where anyone around her was being hit up by the press trying to get information. And I heard in a couple podcasts and read, I can't remember where because I didn't write it down, that said that her therapist was on, like, retainer for press at £1,000 a week to give information about Diana the press.
That's illegal.
Like, super unethical and alleged, because, again, I can't remember where I read it, but I heard it in multiple podcasts. So, like, she's becomes paranoid as fucking shit.
I don't blame her.
Not at all. And let's not forget her lover, who died in the motorcycle accident,
she's so paranoid,
which made her already very, very paranoid.
Oh my God.
That was just an accident. Like, the 17-year-old who did it, like, her parents, everyone was like, no, it was just an accident. She couldn't let that go.
Yeah.
She's pushing everyone away. As we mentioned, I mentioned in the last episode, she had Fergie, but they were kind of having a falling out because of everything going on in the press and them being pitted against each other. At home, her eating disorder is raging. And people are starting to make comments about it.
When you say people, are you talking about, like, people in her life or, like, the press?
I mean, like, Charles is being like, why would you, like, why eat that? It's just going to come up again later.
Oh, okay. You mean shitty comments towards her about it.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And the queen is being like, the reason your marriage is so hard is because you're bulimic.
A few weeks ago or so, I saw someone comment something on a TikTok and was like, the Queen and Diana had such a loving relationship. And I was like, the fuck are you talking about? I was like, I don't know where you heard that from, but like, that's trash. That's not right. That's not real. She was an asshole to her.
Yeah. I'm sure there were maybe good moments, but like a broken clock is right twice a day. So of course there's going to be good moments at some point. People are also still kind of like looking at Fergie, who's like beloved by the Queen and she's into all of these things that the King is doing and stuff, that they're like, well, like, why can't you be more like Fergie? And that is just so toxic for someone. An old friend of Diana's from her pre-Charles days comes to Diana and sits her down and she's like, all right, tough love, good chap. I don't know. The reason that you feel like shit, the reason that you can't get out of bed, the reason that you're fucking fainting is because of your bulimia. It's really bad. Everyone is watching you fade away. And if you don't seek some sort of help for this, I'm going to go tell the press everything.
Wild to threaten someone with telling the press about your fucking bulimia to get them to go seek medical help.
It's so unethical.
Wow.
But it worked.
She's the queen of extreme, so of course that worked for her.
She had to be blackmailed into self-care, basically.
Also, I don't want that to sound like mean that I said queen of extremes, but she really is.
She really is. She threw herself down the stairs. She pushed her stepmom down the stairs. Like, this is just the reality. She starts seeing a psychiatrist who is giving her books about eating disorders and bulimia that she's reading in secret. But she's like, oh my God, like, holy shit, is this play about me? Because the thing with eating disorders, especially pre-internet, is that they tell you you're the only one dealing with this. And that if anyone else knows about it, they're going to judge you for it. So she had no idea that other people dealt with this.
It's that whole thing where, like, we've told people for so long, don't talk about it because, like, it's not happening to as many people as you think. And then people kill themselves. And it's like, actually, hey, we should all be talking about our mental health because way more of us deal with a lot of this stuff than don't. Recently, I said something to my mom about, like, something that I posted, something that my brother posted. And I was like, oh, it's similar that we're posting these selfies and like good for us because we're both going through, we've been through like similar things in the last few years, similar processes and losses in our life. And I was like, oh, good for him. And then she made a comment and was like, you two are so dramatic with how you post online. She was like, sometimes I think it could make people concerned. And I was like, oh, because I'm open about like my mental health and like my feelings and how I've been feeling. Because I looked at her and I was like, I have a platform. I should be talking about these things. I should be open about this. That's actually really important to me. And through my own struggles, I have learned if somebody is holding it in and isn't talking about it, it's more detrimental to them and others around them than if we're actually going to be honest and speak about it. So I still think that a lot of the older generation still holds that like hold it in, don't talk about it notion even now. And I'm like, do you know, it's so harmful to people who are struggling.
Darkness goes away when you shine a light on it. It's like quite as simple as that. And yeah, done.
That's the thought.
That is the full thought. Getting this feeling of community is really helping her. And her eating disorder never fully goes away, but she does get it very much so under control. She starts building a lot of confidence, and it's this confidence that led to her confronting Camilla, like I brought up in the last episode. But it's that same confidence mixed with her paranoia that leads to some harmful behavior. I don't know if I've said it outright or if I've just kind of been dancing around it, like through quoting Tina Brown, but Diana uses the media a lot to actively hurt Charles. Quote, the princess's 30th birthday in July of 1991 triggered an onslaught of negative marital speculation, some artful PR on Diana's part, culminating in an especially well-informed piece by Andrew Morton in the Sunday Times, suggesting that she would be spending her milestone birthday alone at Kensington Palace. Charles Camp furious, retaliated with a leak that the prince had wanted to give his wife a bang-up party, but she had refused the offer. This is the latest example whereby the Prince of Wales is being made to look bad through no fault of his own. An unnamed Charles friend was quoted in the Daily Mail's melodramatic, black-bordered front page takeout by Nigel Dempster. Diana, in turn, let it be known that Charles was going to invite only his stuffy Highgrove friends. Diana appeared to win this round. She woke up at Kensington Palace on her birthday to the news that two opinion polls had voted her the most popular member of the royal family. End quote.
This is absolutely wild.
Wild. Wild rich people things.
It's a social media tiff pre-social media.
Through newspapers.
Wild.
Just talk to each other.
You have phones. You have people who will literally take a note from one house to the other. Like, you pay people for that.
Literally. This is like where Tina Brown comes in and is like, Diana likes to manipulate the media. And she says it all throughout her book. And looking back on her 2007 views in her 2007 book, it's really easy for me to be like, bitch, of course she did. That was her fucking job, to give us a fairy tale, to give you the ability to write this fucking book. Like, gobble, 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 we just want a story.
Yeah, sure, you could tell by my face, but I'm like, why are you saying that about just her when we know that the entire royal family literally keeps the press on retainer so that they can manipulate what comes out about them? She learned it from them.
Also, every single celebrity.
Is that not the name of the fucking game? Because you want good press about yourself.
Like, isn't that the whole thing?
It's weird to, and the book is about him, really, right? Not just her.
Tina Brown's book is like the Diana Chronicles. Okay. So it includes, obviously, stuff about him. It's about all of them. But this one is like, Diana is the focus. I do feel like Tina is really harsh on Diana.
I feel like that comment very vindictively directed at her when we know that that's quite literally how the royal family operates with the press.
Yeah.
So to like point it out just about her and in like a negative way feels weird.
No one ever really talks about men manipulating the press, even though it's like it's all they fucking do.
Women are always so calculated.
Yeah, I just think it's weird, and I don't like that narrative. There's a lot, I think I've said that a few times, that a few ways that Tina kind of frames some of her stuff. But then on the other hand, Andrew Morton's book is like way too chill. Like, wait, doesn't mention any of her affairs. Like, it's very Diana. So great.
Diana on a pedestal.
Yes. It doesn't really paint the whole picture.
Does anything ever?
Fair. I don't know if it was before or after the whole birthday back and forth in the newspaper, but 1991 is the year that she starts working in secret with Andrew Morton for his book. The two of them cannot be seen together. So instead, Diana's longtime friend from episode one, Dr. James Coldhurst, is meeting with Diana in secret and asking Andrew's questions, recording the sessions, and like going through all of this crazy spy effort to drop off the tapes to Andrew.
I was wondering this entire time why it was recorded. Now this makes so much sense. Okay.
Because she's like, there could be no, he couldn't be coming to see her. There could be no.
I'm going to leave that in there. Thanks, Ring camera.
Your parents have so many dogs.
So many dogs. In a house where she wouldn't allow me to put my own dog on the ground. No, guys, it's the fucking Ring camera. They do it. You can hear that outside the door. And they do it so it like tricks people into thinking there's dogs inside. And I'm like, it sounds so recorded.
Sure.
It literally sounds fake.
Oh, God. And I think that it's because the meetings between her and Andrew weren't happening one-on-one that Diana really is.
Give me one sec.
Okay.
Oh my fucking God. That fucking lawn guy is here and he's on the mower in the front yard. So I'm going to keep myself muted until I actually talk.
So I think it's because the interview with Andrew isn't quite in person that Diana really is given rein to edit and kind of oversee the book a little bit. But I also think that maybe because she was talking to her friend James and not directly to Andrew, it was a little bit easier for her to give more detail than maybe she would have otherwise, regardless of the fact that she was also not completely honest in the book.
Yeah, it created some kind of level of comfort for her and safety.
Exactly. All of that is just kind of like going on through all of this. And, you know, we'll come back to it, of course, come back to it in the timeline. But I think one of the biggest devastations, not the biggest, let me rephrase, one of the lost points of devastation in this whole scenario is that Charles and Diana, had they just been able to fucking speak to each other, not just like as humans, but also as equals, they could have been a phenomenal, unstoppable team.
When you talk power couple, they really could have been.
Oh my God. They could have changed everything. The 80s and 90s was a huge time period of Diana doing everything that she could to end the stigma against HIV and AIDS. And this included her going into a hospital for patients with AIDS and photographing herself for the newspaper of her shaking hands without gloves on with someone who had AIDS.
Any other normal person who did not have her kind of celebrity, like, I don't think that people would have paid attention to that act so much, but because she was so well known and so beloved across the world, that moment had such an insane impact upon the way that AIDS patients were viewed. It's like astounding to think about how such a normal act of like human exchange had so much power behind it.
I don't know if even we can understand like how stigmatized AIDS was at this time. It was such a huge deal that the man whose hand Diana was shaking was posed in such a way because he didn't want to be seen or identifiable in any way because he was worried that the stigma of him having AIDS would go back to and mess up his family, which it absolutely would have had he been identified. So you can't see his face. There are no identifying features. All you can really just, the point of the photo is Diana, gloveless, AIDS patient. Exactly what you said. It, by showing the world how to be compassionate, she made a huge impact against the stigma of AIDS. And I just want to remind people that in this time period now, undetectable means untransmittable. And there still very much so is an AIDS stigma that exists today. And at one point, when I feel comfortable after having done my research, we will be doing an episode about it. Diana had this amazing ability to be the face and connection to the people, whereas Charles had a wild ability to raise absurd amounts of money. I'm talking raising over $50 million in the early 90s for one of the fundraisers that he did. I can't remember for which project, but that was like regular
some
for him.
Some people are like wizards at fundraising. Like, it's actually insane to watch. Like, my chair of the Manville Dems, one of those people, can walk into a room, talk to every single person, and walk out with a check from everyone. It's it's wild to watch. And I'm a fucking people person, like talking to people. Like, I know how to talk to people. Goddamn, that's a skill.
And I don't think that Charles is a people person. Imagine his ability. I mean, $50 million in the early 90s, $50 million in 1991 would be $115,105,726. He raised a ton of fucking money. Imagine what the two of them could have done together. I want to see that timeline so badly. It just goes the other way. It's 1992, and in private, unless they're fighting, Diana and Charles are barely talking. In public, they put on their shows, and I feel like when I look at photos of the two of them at this time, all I can really see is disdain for each other. Fergie and Andrew's marriage is breaking down. So Diana's sort of seeing what it looks like when as Fergie's in the process of leaving the royal family. In March is when Diana's father dies from the heart attack. And then that summer, June of 1992, her and Charles are in Highgrove, just like doing their things. Charles is sitting at the table, opens the paper with his morning coffee, and reads the headline of the day. Diana driven to 5 suicide bids by uncaring Charles. Andrew Morton's book has hit the world.
Oh, fuck.
Charles and Diana literally had guests over and like have to continue their little facade for these guests, offering them tours and like doing their whole thing.
My jaw is on the floor. Gag. This is crazy.
Quote, in our era, when media is king and celebrity hunting is the sport of media kings, this is truly what royal training is for. To absorb the most public possible revelation of the most private possible revelations without showing any emotion at all. Diana, this time, could not perform that feat. It was too obvious that she was the source. She made her excuses and beat a retreat from the breakfast table to her room. Charles stayed where he was, impassively reading all the way through the sensational account of his own marital miseries. Then, after chatting amiably with his guests, the prince took them for a pleasant stroll of Highgrove's garden. Only then did he mount the stairs to his wife's room with the newspaper in his hand and say something that made Diana dash downstairs with a scarlet face and brimming eyes to flee back to London. End quote from Tina Brown. We don't know. I don't know what Charles said, but I can picture it in my head. Basically, like I've already watched The Crown. I haven't because I didn't want any of that to influence this episode, but like I can fucking see it in my head so well.
The fact that they were together when it dropped. If I like knew when that was coming out and I was her, I'd be like, we're gonna be in separate places. Oh, that feels like so dangerous.
I know. Quote, I could hear my wife talking as I read those words in the paper, the prince later told a friend. He passed the afternoon hammering a polo ball for his team at a park in Sussex and got home late from an unspecified destination having had a few drinks. End quote. I mean, whew. Also, like, imagine that moment for Charles. Ugh. What this book brings to the world is the knowledge of Diana's eating disorder, her suicide attempts, and the confirmation that Charles is having, quote, extramarital chummery, end quote, with Camilla.
The way that she was like, if y'all want to tell the world about my bulimia, I'm going to tell them first.
Right. She still got the help, but she laid it all out on the table.
She said, uno reverse, motherfuckers.
To the public and to everyone, Diana's like, I had nothing to do with this book. This is unofficial. This is unauthorized. But reading the details, Charles knows 100% for fucking sure that she talked to the press. Because Diana was like, this is unofficial, unauthorized, this becomes one of the most banned books in England. And this is also like the very thing that Diana's sister did with Charles that ruined their relationship. She knew the one thing that would burn it entirely, and she did it so magnificently. I mean, let's be real. She did it. The next day, the two of them were talking about ending their marriage immediately. The thing is, though, this isn't just like a normal divorce, not even just like a normal famous person divorce or a normal rich person divorce. These children are like literally royal property. There are laws, like literal laws, written into English code that only apply to the royal family about how custody can work.
That, but that makes sense.
Me either.
That's crazy.
But yeah, like they have to have like heirs and shit. So like it would have been like just full stop fucking illegal for Diana to take the kids. The queen is like, maybe you guys should just like chill out for 6 months and then we'll talk about it. No. Prince Philip starts harassing Diana via letter about her behavior and is like, you ruined the marriage. Your bulimia is like led Charles to Camilla, at one point essentially insinuated that Diana like didn't even care that Charles was like nice enough to not cheat on her in the first few years of their relationship.
Oh, how kind.
Right? Like, oh, he's so great. I really like just love the chance to bring up what a huge asshole Prince Philip is. And as the letters kind of continue, because they do have a conversation, he like a little bit at one point is like, well, we also like have these tapes of your affair. And once again, Diana's just like, excuse me? What the fuck? Like, where? What? Why do these tapes exist? Reigniting her paranoia, regardless of the fact that he like takes it back immediately and nothing ever comes of it, she's just like, why is everyone threatening me with these fucking tapes? So by the end of the year, they reach an agreement for their settlement. Charles is going to move to a different palace or a different part of the palace. Diana gets to stay. She doesn't give a shit about her title. She just like wants some of that cash, baby, and she wants to be able to see her kids. By the end of the year, they announce their formal separation, and Diana is like slowly but surely walking her way to freedom. This agreement includes getting the boys every other weekend and half of the school holidays. I'm pretty sure they're in boarding school at this point. It's this time that Diana kind of starts reflecting on her life a little bit and reaching out to past family members in order to reconnect. She reconnects with her grandma and even reaches out to Rain and is like, hey, my bad. Oops. Rain is like, I'm not going to meet you alone.
Smart choice.
So fair. But they do end up meeting and she's like, look, I'm sorry. You really loved my dad and I was horrible to you. I'm so sorry. And it's the beginning of 1993 that the Charles and Camilla tapes come out, Tampon Gate. But what really stood out to Diana, are you laughing at Tampon Gate?
Yes.
What really stood out to Diana from these conversations was how much time was spent planning how the two of them were going to meet up and where they were meeting up. Because they were meeting up at houses of like mutual friends of Diana's and Charles. So she's like, cool. Everyone knew and helped them. What did you just see?
One of the guys is using the weed whacker and it sounds like he like hit the side of the house and it like shook the floor.
Oh.
He was like right outside the window.
Oh, that's wild.
The curtains are like a sheer white. So I'm like, I hope they can't see me, but I can definitely see them.
So she reads this article and she's like, cool, they all fucking knew and they all helped him. Great. Excellent. So she's even, you know, more paranoid and even pushing more and more people away. It's around this time that she also starts getting involved with this guy, Oliver, who is someone who kind of helps with like logistics between her and Prince Charles. And he's also married and has children. And it's like,
oopsie.
Not good, Diana. Didn't you just like get really fucking pissed at your husband for having an affair?
Exactly that. Oh my God.
And his wife is like very wealthy and like uses her wealth to support his artistic endeavors. Like he's not going to leave her. Soap opera, soap opera. The wife finds out and she takes him back and she's like, but you have to end it with Diana. You can't do this weird work for her anymore. You guys can't be friends. It's done. So he breaks up with Diana. And they start getting harassed via phone call, just nonstop calls all the time. And they go to Scotland Yard and they're like, someone is harassing us. We're getting a bunch of calls all the time, sometimes in the middle of the night. And it's just someone like breathing into the phone. It's super scary. Can you figure out where this is coming from? And they trace it back to a payphone in Kensington Palace.
Stop.
The press gets a hold of it and they're like, you know, Diana's harassing this married man that she had an affair with. They're like, what the fuck, Princess Diana? It's just like harassing this married man that she was having this affair with. Like, that's wild. And the papers here with it and they run with it. And she goes to like another set of papers and she's like, oh my God, I couldn't have been doing that because here's my journal and like my planner and stuff. See, during all of these times that the phone calls happened, I was doing something. Here you go. That was like, she fucking faked that whole, all that paperwork. That was like not real. Like, that's a crazy thing to do, Diana. She goes to Oliver and is like, please tell the press it wasn't me. Like, come on. He refuses. She's like fully done with him now. After that, she's like, she stops calling him, no longer into him at all. But like, yikes, yikes. unacceptable
the red
behavior.
Flags are red flagging.
Yeah. This same year, one of the previous men that she had an affair with that I mentioned, James Hewitt, publishes his book that includes the details of their affair. So the press is like all over that. All over it. They step into a new level of horrible. Mm. They step into the level of the paparazzi that led to her death. They're following her everywhere. They're hiding cameras in the gym that she goes to so that they can like get photos of her without her realizing she's being photographed. They start yelling things at her as she's walking to try and get her to like react and blow up because like that's worth money. They're like calling her a bitch. They're calling her a cunt. They're telling her to lift her head and act like a fucking princess, like while she's with her kids. To the point where there's just like a lot of photos of Diana like walking around and like head down crying. Yeah. And she ends this year out announcing that she is like retiring from the public eye, which doesn't really mean she didn't really do anything different. She kind of pulls back with the amount of charities that she's working with and just focuses on a core few of them. But she doesn't really change anything else. It's sort of just her polite way of being like, hey, leave me the fuck alone. I'm no longer a royal. We have separated. It's very important to the queen that I don't have this title. I am, please, no, but like, leave me alone. And this is where my notes end. The next episode is going to cover the rest of her story. Oh, good. An hour and 24 minutes. Excellent. I don't know what the next episode is going to look like, if I'm being honest. I'm still struggling writing the notes. So I'm going to be sitting down and hopefully finishing that this weekend. Diana was a whole person that includes really uncool shit, like harassing a married man and his wife.
Like pushing your stepmother down the stairs.
And also helping end the stigma against AIDS and raising a lot of money and awareness for things. Her acknowledgement of her having an eating disorder led to a huge increase in the amount of people who were diagnosed with bulimia and eating disorders like a few years, like the year after the book came out. And it's not because she made bulimia look cool. It's because people finally felt like they could fucking talk about it.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, if Princess Diana has this and she can get help for it, maybe I can too. She did good things and she did bad, and we shouldn't judge her or Charles for those actions as much as I want to. We have to like just understand that like if our lives were dissected like this, I'm sure there would not be some not great stuff. So
I just think to our high school years and I'm like, oof, rough.
Yikes. We're all just people. Try and remember that.
Thanks, Katie.
And that's my episode.
Oh, hey, also, we're recording on Pansexual Visibility Day. So to all my fellow pan homies, hey, it's our day. I see you.
There you go.
Until then. Bye.
For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.